The truth is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3 FM.
And we have Professor Carenza Lewis back with us as well. How are you, Carenza?
I'm very well. How are you?
Excellent. Well, a little bit damp, but then again, that's what we like about the British weather, really. It's marvellous. So, actually, not one, not two, but three Lewises on the production, which is truly wonderful in all sorts of ways. Anna, I don't think you're any relation to Professor Carenza Lewis, but of course you might be.
Yeah, never know. I mean, it's a popular surname, mainly Welsh, I've been told by relatives, but yet to find a Welsh connection.
Any Welsh connection that you can provide, Carenza, in terms of...
Yes, my grandfather was Welsh, actually, so yes, I am a Welsh Lewis of extraction. Though, funnily enough, he's buried in Woodhall Spa.
It just goes to show the magical nature of that. William Coles in Edinburgh, have you returned to your Skype connection?
Yes, I have, surprisingly. I've not been cut off in the last 5 minutes.
No.
I thought you might have to sit down.
Yeah, well, it's the excitement, the sheer excitement of joy. Now, would you like to speak about the awesome event that will be Lincoln Lights with Professor Carenza Lewis? Or would you like to chat about life in Jersey? Or where do you want to go? I mean, it's up to you, William. You can take on the role of the Scottish correspondent in Edinburgh, connecting Lincoln with Jersey, a little island just off the coast of France.
I love Jersey. It's the hothouse of the UK. I remember going there and being particularly captivated by the Nazi history and all the Nazi caves.
Why was that, William? Anyway, yeah. So, Anna, marvellous. Talking of history, of course, brings us neatly round, he says, trying to shoehorn this in, to, of course, Carenza, your speciality in terms of historical artefacts and a variety of other things. And as I leaf through the copious scenarios here of wonderments that actually is faced as far as the Lincoln Lights are concerned, we see the Black Death in your garden. Which, of course, right at the heart of the whole thing. And, you know, Anna, I can't recall when Carenza made her debut on the programme whether you were with us and sort of shared this notion of the Black Death in your garden.
No, but this is intriguing because somebody brought this up only a couple of days ago about Black Death victims and where they were buried in Jersey. Oh. So this, interesting thought.
William, any Black Death in your garden in Edinburgh?
They've got a few big plague pits just up from us, so if you wanted to go digging, yes, you'd find it. Not actually in the garden, but half a mile from here.
So, Carenza, share with us.
Well, what I can say is you've probably all got evidence for the impact of the Black Death in ordinary gardens. You don't have to find plague pits. And in fact, plague pits are really, which are the cause of the mass burials of victims of mass epidemics. They're actually very difficult to find. They very rarely turn up, actually. And often when we do find mass burials, they turn up to be something completely different. So most recently, a load of sort of mass burials of people just tipped in a pit turned out to be Viking period and from Scandinavia and are probably a Viking party that met with a bad end. Black Death cemeteries are generally very neatly laid out, actually, and on the whole, mostly people are buried in the old parish, their own parish cemeteries, apart from big cities and big towns where you do sometimes get mass cemeteries. But the work I've been doing has actually been looking for bits of pottery, just ordinary pottery, nothing gruesome like bones or anything, or nothing intriguing like bones. But the pottery is intriguing because, of course, everybody uses pottery. We've all broken plates and mugs and cups and bowls and so on, and just thrown them away. And these days they get taken away, but in previous centuries they just stayed where they were dropped. And so you can compare the amount of pottery before the Black Death with the amount afterwards and see what the impact was on the street you were living in, or indeed on your own garden. Was your property inhabited before the Black Death and abandoned afterwards? Did it carry on as before, or was it actually one of the very few which did better after that period? So that's my research.
Fascinating stuff.
It's the sort of thing I know, Anna, we've spoken of in times past when you've been actually investigating the sort of ancestry of Jersey and so on. I just thought it's interesting that it connects with that. Of course, to actually see Carenza in person, it's clearly you need to make the journey from Jersey to Lincoln. It's easily done.
Yeah.
And our very own Andrew David has made the journey from Lincoln to Jersey this very day. I think he's flown across. So it's a small world.
I think our vice chancellor is over there at the moment.
Exactly. Exactly. Matthew Craigo. He's also heading off to Jersey. It's obviously the place to go, Carenza.
I've never been to Jersey.
It's the milk.
But as William said, it's a great place to actually go to find World War II memorabilia.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Any thoughts or questions?
I'll bore you. There's a lady called Professor Jilly Carr, who's from Cambridge.
She was a colleague of mine at Cambridge, actually.
Is she?
Yes, I used to know her.
She came looking for trench art, and that was before I knew of the phrase trench art, and I thought, I thought trench art was a person. And I said, what's his first name, Mr. Trenchart? And then she said, no, Trenchart. I went, oh, okay. But she's very earnest and she's very clued up on things like this. And we're very lucky she won a scholarship for part of the Millennium funding for her research in Jersey. So she's one of us, really. She's one of the locals in the terms of going places, doing things to benefit the knowledge of the island. So, yes, hats off to her, yes.
To be precise, we're talking about the art in trenches, if we're actually going to be sort of a pedant about this whole thing, because it's very important. William, thoughts from yourself?
To Corinza, what's the sort of quirkiest thing that you've dug up in your years?
Quirkiest, that's an interesting notion. Well, we found some intrigue. We found a bicycle once in a trench. That was slightly odd. It was only a metre square trench, and obviously it's a bit difficult to fit a bicycle into a trench that big. That was probably the most unexpected thing. It was just so bizarre. You're digging in someone's back garden looking for bits of pottery to do with the changing the settlement after the Black Death, and what you actually discover is a bicycle. So that's just weird. And you think, who buries a bicycle in their garden?
I wondered where my bike went.
A historical sort of moment. Meanwhile, just to give a little flavour in terms of what is happening in September. Lincoln, get hold of tech and science. It's Lincoln Lights, which is the initial sort of theme which will be opening up a whole range of things. For people who actually want to access the whole background of this, we've got a series of podcasts there: CSI Seal, Fingerprints from the Past with Professor Philippa Hoskin, The Virtual Blacksmith Forge with Dr. John Murray, The Happiness Lab, very good that, Dr. Roger Bretherton, Mark the Robot, in which we explain how the robotic world of the artificial life form and the University of Lincoln robotic celebrity Mark actually operates, Biofeedback Technology and Sport Performance, Myths and the Science of Sleep. And that's just scratching the surface, Corinza.
Yes, there really is something for everything. We ran the first of these lights festivals last year, and this year it's going to be bigger and better, building on everything we learnt last year. It's just really about discoveries being made about new knowledge. It's called LIGHTS. The LI is for Lincoln and the GHTS.
Get hold of technology and science.
Precisely. What else could it be? But LIGHTS is about how, you know, with LIGHTS you can see more and you can do more. And that's really what new discoveries are about. And there's everything from, yeah, how to get a better night's sleep and why that's a good thing. You can take part in experiments improving sports performance or assessing whether it's safe to text while you're walking. You can compete with a robot to play rock, paper, scissors. You can find out about evolution. You can learn about new cancer treatments. There's just so much. We've got 45 different activities ranging from stands that you can just have a quick 5-minute look at, through to lectures where you can sit and listen to a world expert on their subject and then ask them questions about it.
I was particularly impressed with Myths and Science of Sleep, which we did earlier this very day, actually, with Professor Graham Law, exploring the benefit, myth and research into the world of sleep. We stayed awake through the whole thing. I couldn't resist it. But he did actually say that when he last delivered his piece, at a conference a couple of days ago, he found out latterly that audience had actually taken a little book and opened it up on in terms of how long you could actually go without mentioning if people have fallen asleep. Now, it's strange. William, questions for yourself for the team, either Anna in Jersey or Corenza in Lincoln or Shaylee, who's also in Lincoln. It's entirely up to your good self. And congratulations, by the way, on the world premiere of your movie, which took place last Wednesday, which is why you couldn't take part in the programme, because, of course, you were actually at the Edinburgh Film Festival opening night.
Indeed I was, with the movers and shakers, though I didn't dare wear a kilt. I've been living here for 15 years, but I'm not allowed to wear a kilt yet. Maybe another 10 years I'll be there.
I would probably say about 12 usually. It's about sort of 27 years, I think, before you're officially allowed to actually wear a kilt. Although, is there a Coles tartan that you've kept very quiet? I suppose you could design your own, really.
I was always told that you inherited your right to wear your tartan through your maternal line. Scotland. Ooh. Scots being a matrilineal society, and so it's your mother's mother's mother mother. I was told this by my mother, who reckoned she had the right to wear the Black Watch tartan from the Gunn clan through her maternal line, so she might have been biased. But apparently, yes, if you go back far enough through your maternal line and can find a Scot, then you can wear their tartan.
All right, okay, even if it's sort of 1%, I could do it.
Well, you might need to speak to Nicola Sturgeon about that, but...
She's in a very amenable mood these days.
I think so. Yeah, so long as it's straight down the female line, because you just is like a, you know, well, it's like your DNA, really. You know, you inherit your mitochondrial DNA from your mother. That's how they identified Richard III, who wasn't entitled to wear a kilt.
Indeed, and the world would have been a different place if he had been, of course. It's just a strange routine. As I say, Bill, last week, of course, we had the premiere of, I keep saying, you've fed this into my mind, it's the Yorkshire version of Brokeback Mountain. No, of course, it's God's Own Country, which has been getting quite good reviews, actually. How was the premiere?
Was a little bit gritty. Maybe I'm just squeamish. My wife didn't like it at all. It was pretty good. It was pretty good, though. Yes, it was slightly near the knuckle for me.
Okay. Oh, you must tell us more. That sounds intriguing.
Exactly. Yes. Share. It was, bearing in mind, it's a family-friendly
graphic
show. Oh. Would you like to provide the plot line so that we can actually sort of... I mean, I've given you the sort of the headline there of the British version of Brokeback Mountain, two Yorkshire people, set in Lancashire, I believe.
You've got a Yorkshire farmer who's having a bit of unhappy time of things. He's on-off love affairs, and a Romanian guy comes out to help out on the farm, and they fall in love. And it all... happily ever after.
Yeah. There we are. And there wasn't a little bleep there, quite deliberately. It was just the sort of system was sort of operating. It's great stuff. Shaylee, any questions you'd like to put to Anna, or to Bill, or whomever, really?
Yeah, so it's to Carenza. I'm just wondering, you seem quite passionate about the Black Death. How did you get into something like that?
Well, actually, do you know, it was... sheer accident, really. What I was really interested in was the settlements and the way that villages evolve, which is really interesting, but not quite as headline-grabbing. And so I was doing lots of excavation in these villages, and then I suddenly started noticing that we had this huge drop in the amount of pottery after the Black Death. So then I started looking at it and then realised that this is evidence for the Black Death. The whole of the 14th century is just one disaster after another. Every morning, when you wake up, be grateful you weren't born at the beginning of the 14th century because everything goes wrong. And on a day like today, you can empathise with the fact that the weather is terrible, the medieval warm period ends, and there is a series of famines and people's animals die and their crops fail, and then there's the Black Death. Oh, and there's constant war as well. We're fighting, the various Edwards are fighting Wales and Scotland and France and anybody else who dares to stick their nose out. But the Black Death is the culminating thing. The data I've got suggests there's a drop of about 45% in the population, and that some communities saw an 85% drop in the density and the size of their population. It must have been like living in a sort of deserted place with, you can almost feel the tumbleweed blowing through.
Yeah,
no, it's really like that.
Don't worry about it. It's just, suddenly you mentioned Black Death and all strange sort of things happen.
But it just makes you wonder how people coped.
Yeah.
You know, when you think of the news today, you get sort of some kind of, disaster, an epidemic of swine flu or something, and half a dozen people die. How we'd cope today with those sort of levels. I think civilization would collapse, and it didn't.
Yeah.
You know what's strange? A couple of days ago, a conversation arose where a lady who's pretty good on local history said something to do with the Black Death. She said about land ownership in Jersey, particularly an island of 45 square miles, is how, you know, did the Black Death affect land ownership? Because we have seigneurs, it's a feudal system even today. But at what point did Jersey residents start to own land, or did they just grab it from the people that had survived? You know, did they just say, well, that land is now mine because the seigneur has died, and, you know, there was no one to kind of police it given the statistics? And that's a question that we're going to throw at some of the local historians, because it does beg the question how land was apportioned after the Black Death, being so cataclysmic, and an island where the population was best thousands, it wasn't, you know, much more than that.
Yeah, it does have a huge effect, because before the Black Death, you've got generally more people at the sort of bottom end of society around who, you know, would work on the manors, and many of them are born on the manors and they have to stay there and they couldn't move because they get sent back and stuff. And so that kind of feudal system works quite well if you're the lord at the top with lots and lots of people at the bottom who have to do what you want them to. Whereas after the Black Death, after the compound disaster of the 14th century, the kind of tables are turned and, you know, the lords are desperate for anyone to come and work on their land because there aren't enough people around. And the people who would do that work are actually in a position to start saying, well, actually, I don't want to be a bonded peasant and come and do your ploughing 2 days a week. I want to pay rent for that land, and I want to be able to pass that tenure on to my sons and my heirs. Yes. And it is when it accelerates that breakdown of feudalism. But in some manners, it carries on right through, and in others, it breaks down really early. So it'd be really interesting subject for your local historians to see precisely what happened on Jersey.
Could be responsible for another little bond between Lincoln and Jersey. We like to feel we've done it on a regular basis, and why not? William, would you like to put those last two questions to Anna Lewis in your own inimitable way from, well, not just one country, the island of Great Britain in many ways, if we're still connected together?
Anna, have you had an interesting telephonic link with Saren today?
I have indeed, thank you very much.
Would you like to come back for some more?
I would. Thank you for the offer. Yes, please.
Well done. Well done. It's often been said that sometimes scientists will find a formula literally for everything, and it looks as though we might well be approaching that notion about how to find the perfect balance in life. When it comes to sorting out the correct formula, though, the best person to go to, the go-to soul for formula in all manner of things, is the founder and director of independent research consultancy Mind Lab International, the legendary, awesome Dr. David Lewis. Good morning, David. How are you?
Well, I really don't know how to follow that, but thank you so much once again. It's lovely to speak with you.
As ever, a delight. Now, this particular thing, we've spoken in the past about a whole range of different formulae.
But, yes.
The life balance one, it seems almost that elusive key to success in many ways. How sort of did you come up with this whole series of developing this? Obviously commissioned by snack brand Yushoy, how sort of people can cherish their experiences over possessions, and what are the secrets to the perfect balance in life?
Well, we interviewed over 2,000 people, and we asked them to rate various aspects, well, in fact, 7 factors in their lives on a scale of 0 to 10. So, for example, how much time do they spend at work? How much time do they spend with their family? How much exercise do they take? All these kind of fairly, you know, standard things. But we also had a question on materialism. Would they value an experience, spending their money on an experience, going to a concert, going to Glastonbury, going to an opera, you know, whatever their taste was, going on a holiday where you actually learn something rather than just lie in the sun and get yourself a bit intoxicated. And we found that people who actually, and increasingly with in our culture, there's a value on experiences, on authentic experience. So when you've spent your money, you feel you've put something in your memory bank which you can look back on as the years pass, rather than as a kind of a gizmo or something which gives you a pleasure for a week or 10 days or so, and then you forget all about it and buy another gizmo. So we actually found there were 3 things which mitigate against happiness. And these were, we found, the least happy people were those who have a preference for indulging in material things rather than in experiences. Those who have a preference for work rather than relaxation. Those who have a preference for resting passively, so taking exercise rather than taking exercise. So these are the kind of things. People who cherish other people, who like to go out and socialise rather than people who feel themselves constantly on their own. This is very key importance of overall life balance and happiness.
It's a refreshing take on the 21st century philosophy, because for so often in the 20th century, and even before then, some might say, yes, it's the rise of consumerism and yep, so on. Part of the marketing brand was actually, if you're feeling unhappy, buy stuff. And if you're still a bit unhappy, buy some more stuff, and that kind of constant consumerism. Sometimes you need to, again, just adjust that. And from what you've been saying, David, it seems actually sometimes buying stuff isn't the solution to happiness.
I think that's absolutely right. And it's probably what philosophers and religious people have been telling us down the millennia, that you can't buy happiness. Although, as one of my rich friends pointed out, you may not be able to buy friends, but you can actually get a better class of enemy.
Yes.
So, but I think more and more people are wondering, really, you know, whether it's worthwhile spending all their lives at the office. After all, I don't think anybody on a deathbed wish they'd spent more time in the office. And they're feeling that there must be more to life. And so the way they're seeking this is by, you know, looking for different experience. Let me give you an example. A banker friend of mine, who was kind of a very senior banker, he said, I had an epiphany moment. I said, I woke up and suddenly realized I was doing work I didn't like to earn money I didn't need to spend on things which, to impress people I didn't actually really think were worth impressing. And so he gave it all up in an instant and went to restore old cars, which has always been a passion for him. So I think sometimes we kind of step back and take a look at our lives and say, can I be buying myself more experiences? And it didn't cost a huge amount of money. I mean, it's just walking in the countryside, looking at a beautiful sunset, and all these kind of things which are things which we remember, I think, long after we've forgotten the latest gadget we've bought.
I was intrigued to find that many folk would rather stay at home than holiday away. I know the old line was thinking is the best way to travel, but is this a suggestion of saying, actually, yes, astral travelling doesn't have as great a carbon footprint as using a jet engine?
I think that's probably true. Sensualisation, imagining things. But, I mean, England is a very beautiful country. Britain is a very beautiful country, I should say. And, you know, I think more and more people, particularly now with, you know, austerity biting and the pound not being as strong as it was, are finding that they can get a very good holiday experience at home. And again, I was coming back to this idea, the old school was saying, oh, just lie on the beach, get yourself a suntan, you know, get a lot of sangria in you and come home. But now people are saying, no, if we're going abroad, we want to have, you know, places where we are understand, learn things about the culture or the architecture or, you know, history of that place rather than just wandering around aimlessly. So it is an increasing trend. Actually, there are some interesting age differences when it comes to life balances. We found that people are in their 60s tended to say they'd found the perfect balance in their lives, whereas only a third of the under 30s thought that. Younger people tended to feel they had, rather bizarrely, too much free time, whereas older people over the age of 40 felt they had too much work. So it's just kind of getting this balance between life at work and life when you're not at work, kind of getting that right, and spending more time with family and people. All these things, to, according to the formula we've created, or at least our mathematicians have created, do tend to produce a higher score on the happiness index.
Were there any surprises that emerged from your own perspective? I mean, you mentioned obviously the aspect relating to age there and issues raises that. Was there anything which you thought, that was a bit of an anomaly?
Well, there were some regional variations. So certainly in your area, people about half, just over half people said they either had too much to do in the time appointed them during the course of the day, or actually too little to do. So it was just kind of interesting kind of difference between people who felt overworked and people who felt underworked, perhaps underappreciated.
So ultimately, we'll find a day where neuropsychologists will have the secrets to everything. I can see we're heading to that sort of basis. But where can people go to find out further information about this particular survey and study? And
well,
indeed,
you mentioned the company which commissioned this work.
Ushai.co.uk.
Perhaps I should spell it. It's a Japanese-inspired product, so it's not perhaps easier to work out how to spell it. It's Y-U-S-H-O-I, and I'm Kraus Ushai, www, of course, and if they go there, they can find out a lot more about this work. The formula, I have to say, I'm just looking at on the page now, was produced by a mathematician who's also a theoretical physicist, and I think it shows.
But I was going to suggest we could read it, but it doesn't really work too well.
No, it doesn't
radio.
Work on radio, yeah. I don't think. I think eyeballs glaze over very quickly when you mention numbers. But essentially, if they plug all these details into this formula, they will come up with a score which will tell them, if they don't already know, I suspect, how happy or unhappy they are with their life at the present time. But I think the great thing to remember is, you know, you don't have to be a victim of your life circumstances. You just take time, step back, and give yourself some me time. This was another thing which surprised me coming out of this research, that people felt they needed more me time. By that I mean time on their own, you know, where they were walking somewhere, or just going, lying on a bed or a couch and turning off all their kind of radios and televisions, iPads and iPhones and all this kind of thing, and just spending 10 or 15 minutes just being with themselves and thinking their own thoughts. And a lot of people seem to be afraid of that. They feel unless they're constantly being kept busy and active, they somehow are failing in life. But I think just time for tranquility and you know, mindfulness now in psychology is a very big issue. People learning to actually take more control over these racing thoughts which keep us from often appreciating life to the full. We're so busy thinking about things, we don't actually step back and look at things.
As many an IT specialist will rightly say, sometimes just switching it off and switching it on again can work wonders.
I agree with you entirely.
David, it's been fantastic as ever, touching base with a good self. I take it you've had a reasonably interesting and relatively happy telephonic link with us this morning.
It's always a pleasure, and I say that with all sincerity.
In which case, Dr. David Lewis, hopefully we'll connect with you again in the very near future.
Very much look forward to that.
Recorded earlier today. David Lewis, CEO of Mind Lab International. Did that resonate at all with your good self, Karenza? In terms of taking time to just reboot and in a world in which we seem that we're constantly juggling this with that and the other?
Well, yes, I suppose it ought to, but my immediate reaction is I don't have time to think about that sort of thing.
So
if I stopped and thought about things, I would just, that whole queue of things waiting to be done would just be too
William,
awful to think about, I think.
William, your thoughts in Edinburgh, did that resonate at all from you, with you, from your own point of view?
It did. Of course, I'm all for new experiences, though what I have noticed is it's not enough just to have the new experience. You've got to have the pictures as well. And so rather than throwing yourself into the experience, there you are taking your pictures, and then you have to rub these pictures in your friends' faces on Facebook and the rest as you gloat about swimming in the Galapagos.
It happens. It happens in oh so many ways. Returning briefly, Carenza, to Lincoln Lights. I'm already hopeful that Shaley will be attending as a graduate of the science fiction talk that's been given by some soul. I don't know. But what other sort of delights would you like to say? And how can people obviously access the superb, and I say that quite deliberately, superb website that already exists?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. There's a direct link to what we've just been talking about because Roger Bretherton, clinical psychologist here, has got an interactive multimedia session about how scientists are improving well-being. That is the Happiness Lab. So there's a direct link there. But yes, the website is now up and live. There's too much really to talk about individually, but it's www.lightsexpo.org. And there's all of the activities there, and I really recommend people just to go and have a browse through. I would absolutely challenge anybody not to find something that they don't think, oh, I'm quite interested in that, or I didn't know anything about that. Everything from bat talks, you can actually go up to Lincoln Castle and have a walk round looking for bats, detecting bats, talk about dog behaviour, about using eye tracking to understand dog behaviour. I really want to have a look at, which is about how computers recognise human faces. With a chance to see if you can beat a computerised passport photo recognition thing, which I would be really intrigued by. Yeah. My passport photo looks nothing like me, I don't think.
It's all to down with retina recognition and biometrics, a whole new world. But William, does that tempt you to make the journey across the border from Nicola Sturgeon land to Theresa May land? If she's still in power, of course, by September. Oh,
and in fact, just to butt in, one of the talks is very relevant to that because it's about why opinion pollsters keep getting it wrong. We've even had to update that since the last election.
Exactly, exactly.
Why do they keep on getting it wrong? It's not just the shy Tories, is it?
I will be interested to hear the talk on it, to be quite honest. And I think it is. Funnily enough, I had a letter published in The Guardian about this after the Trump election, which of course came after the Brexit vote, both of which were not expected. And I was really saying either the pollsters have got to get better or they've got to stop doing it altogether, because I think it affects how people vote if they think they know how it's going.
Exactly. It's a reverse psychology. You tell somebody to not do something, they're going to go and do the whole process. Not since Orson Welles' War of the Worlds radio broadcast has humanity been driven to run screaming through the streets. No, it's not Lincoln Lights, but it's Planet Shockorama, which is what we're going to be focusing on next with Vince Ripper. I'll say that one more time. Vince Ripper and The Rodent Show, who've just released their brand new album, Planet Shockorama, to the world. We have a cover version of David Bowie's Scary Monsters and Super Creeps by Vince Ripper and The Rodent Show. Are you ready for this, William?
I'm licking my lips. I love this song.
When I looked in her eyes, they were blue, but nobody had.
coals in Edinburgh. Does that float your boat?
It does float my boat. I want to hear more of them.
Well, for a band who effectively launched with Boneyard a Go-Go, followed by Boneyard Hits, and It's Fun to Be a Monster, you can only say welcome to the Midweek Drive for his debut from Vince Ripper and the Rodents. It's the Rodent. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. I've just had my tea, actually. I've just been eating a very hot Indian curry. So I'm calling here. I'm actually in my car at the moment because my kids are driving me crazy, so I'll just nip out into my hearse and talk to you lovely people of Lincoln. So how's everything doing? Are you all right this evening?
Well, I think it's fair to say it's Lincoln and Edinburgh, because William's in Edinburgh, and Carenza, we've just already connected between rats and, of course, the Black Death. Your own subject of speciality. So it's wonderful.
Indeed.
It's knitted together perfectly. Do we refer to you as Mr. Rodent, just the Rodent, or is it Rod? I don't know. It's very confusing.
It's the Rodent, really, for show purposes, but my friends call me Ratty, you know, so if you want to call me Ratty, please do. You know, it's not a problem at all, really.
It's almost like a wind in the willows moment, but yes.
I've been a rat for many years, so.
Looking at the track listing for Planet Chocorama, we've got Planet Claire, we've got Teenager from Mars, we've got Outer Limits, The Invasion is Coming, I Can't Find My Mind, of course, Silver Machine, Rocket USA, Shock Love Me, The Blob, Mystery Plane, Flying Saucer Rock and Roll, EST, Trip to the Moon, and, of course, Scary Monsters. William, questions for Ratty.
Ratty, I heard you've got a hearse. That's quite an unusual kind of car. Do you use this for the sort of picking up the groceries from Tesco?
Sometimes, yeah. But I think what initially happened is that, you know, a lot of people don't realise that when we started this, me and Vince, it was just a bit of a drunken idea. You know, because Vincent originally was a very successful DJ in Blackpool, and You know, I'm sure you're aware of my background with Alien Sex Fiend. We weren't really doing much at the time, so me and Vince decided to come up with this kooky idea of Vince spinning some 1950s, 60s rock and roll tunes, and me being the sort of
It was
a podcast, really. It was like a kooky compare thing. Vince is in the hearse now, by the way. He's arrived.
Hey, Vince!
Hey, how are you?
I'm very tempted to say, Vince, as a Manchester City fan, that that's typical Manchester United supporting activity. You arrive a few minutes after the interview started. But never mind, Vince. We love you anyway. It's great stuff. Anyway, moving on from that sort of point of view, keep going, William. The questions and the interview is, I mean, I just feel we can sit back here in Lincoln and get Edinburgh and Manchester just bond via the hearse.
Who else are you covering apart from David Bowie? Who are your main people?
Well, I think what it is, I think when we first started doing the show, I think it was Alien Sex Scene and the Cramps, really, because that was our thing at the time, but I think what's developed with this new album, we've sort of started picking on some other people, didn't we, Vince?
We went for some more sort of like less obvious sort of choice of artists, really. You know, it was mainly in Suicide, wasn't it, and Alan Vegas, and
But I think what we did with the David Bowie track, it was something that we decided to do in the studio. It wasn't really planned. The album itself, Chocorama, was coming together very quickly. And we decided, just to sort of top it off, it would be cool to do something. It's a bit, not so much as a memory, but just something to sort of make people still be aware of David Bowie's magnificent songwriting, you know. So we just thought Scary Monsters would be quite sort of fitting for the album, because there is a theme in the album, which I'm sure you've realised. You know, me and Vince are coming from Planet Chocorama to Planet Earth to give everybody a bit of a kick up the backside and stop whining about politicians and other boring things on this earth and get into rock and roll music and fun and sort of let your hair down a bit. And that's what the whole album is trying to portray, really.
Suddenly I can feel a new political movement starting which could actually take over the country. Carenza.
Well, who knows?
Thoughts from yourself?
It reminds me of Russell Brand, I think.
Any questions about Chocorama or indeed Planet Chocorama that you'd like to, as a specialist in terms of historical science and such like to put to Vince and, of course, Ratty?
Oh, well, OK. What do you think in 100 years' time people are going to be thinking about our period? What would someone doing what you're doing in 100 years' time be doing?
Well, that's a really cool question, actually, because I've got children as well and their children's children. I'm sure that, you know, they're going to be sort of doing similar to what me and Vince are doing, but like in a time traveling pods and bringing people of that time into this time and saying, no, don't listen to too much of this weird music that's just on a level. There's other music from, you know, the year 2004 or 2005 or 2006 or 2007, you know, whatever, you know.
They'll probably make holograms of us, won't they? You know, well, that's it, you know, and we'll still perform 100 years from now, you know.
Shaylee.
I'm just sat here in absolute awe. You guys are awesome.
Oh, that's what you need to come. You need to come to the shows. I mean, we don't do a lot of touring. We're not a touring act really, but we do shows. And we've got Bristol coming up next month, and then we've got the Monster Raving Loony Party here in Blackpool, which is so crazy. You want to try and come to that one? And you know, we've got
maybe we'll go to Lincoln one time.
Lincoln, we should go to Lincoln. Yeah, yeah. We should.
I think, what do we think, Kirk Renz? I think Lincoln is ready for Planet Shockorama's visitors.
Oh, absolutely, yes. I went up to the Festival of Food and Street Food and Comedy up at the Castle a couple of weeks ago. It was brilliant. It'd be a perfect venue for you. You could do anything there. And there was the Cliff Richard last weekend, which I didn't go to.
But... He's very scary, though, these days, I find. You know,
I didn't know exactly.
But he's, I mean, I saw the video from Scary Monsters, and that was very scary, particularly the excessive eyeliner. Never mind.
I think it gets too much at the Castle. They can lock them up in the prison.
You never have too much. Never. anything.
William, anything? I mean, we could talk about tattoos if you wished, but William, anything you
Let's talk about Glastonbury. Are the Rodents going to be playing Glastonbury next year?
Well, first and foremost, it's not on next year, but I think
he's on the case.
He's going fallow.
2019, we should be on the headlining pyramid stage, and we should go up. I think we should be headlining, but we should have Marilyn Manson on before us.
I can see Manila PR sort of having a quiet sort of smile of satisfaction with that particular response. But then, you know, Sheffield Wednesday, Manchester United is a different line entirely. Shaylee, yeah. Anything else other than awesome?
It's like that song was just so reminiscent of like Lost Boys and that whole sort of punk era. And as a young one, as you would say, I was brought up from my dad, who was from Worksop, and that sort of punk thing going on, it was very like reminiscent of your kind of music and what you guys are trying to do, and just keep on doing it because it sounds awesome.
And they could well be having shows in Europe, Mexico, and the United States of America.
Interesting.
How the Donald would actually respond to a touch of that.
We can go do a private show for him. I'm sure he'd love that. We'll put loads of goth makeup on him and a wig.
The offer has been rolled out, courtesy of the Midweek Drive on Siren FM. Standing. William, it falls to you astoundingly yet again to put those last two questions from Edinburgh to our two fine souls in a hearse somewhere in Manchester, or are you on the outskirts of Manchester?
No, we're in Blackpool by the sea.
Let's just Blackpool by the sea. Do you know, I was there only a matter of months ago for the Star Trek exhibition, and here they are living living the dream in Blackpool.
It's not a very good exhibition, though, is it?
I thought they did okay. I mean, it was certainly substantially better than the 50th anniversary celebration. But let's not get into that sort of thing, really. That's a Birmingham Expo, etc. And they did some cracking stuff with, I think, Paul Hill. So, you know, let's be positive about the whole sort of system. So they're in Blackpool, which is important. So we've actually identified exactly where they are. And how can people get hold of, quite literally very carefully, Vince Ripper and the Rodent Show? What's the Facebook site? What's the website? Where do they go? Where does our listener go to find out more details?
I think basically, if you just check our website out, which is quite obvious, it's vincerippandtherodentshow.com. And I think if you go onto Facebook and just put Vince Ripper and the Rodent Show, you'll see there's groups on there. and very easy to find. Just Google it now. That's the new age, isn't it? Well, Google Vince Ripper and the Rodent Show and you'll be amazed. You'll be astonished at the wonder... of the wonderfulness that we're doing.
I'm almost tempted to say for her quarterly basically Gettysburg address to the staff, where Professor Mary Stewart, the Vice Chancellor of this very same University of Lincoln, to actually say, Professor Stewart, have we considered more Vince Ripper and the Rodent Show at the University of Lincoln? Then again, maybe I won't. It's just a thought, isn't it? Last two questions, please, William.
Chaps, have you had an interesting telephonic link with Siren today?
Can you repeat the question, then? We missed that, sorry. Nice.
Yeah. Have you had a good interview today with Siren?
Yeah, it's been okay. Has it passed the time? Have you enjoyed your time on the show, Vince, and the Rodent?
Yes, we are. Yeah, yeah,
good. You, yeah, that's all right. Excellent. Will you return?
Yes, of course.
Well, hey!
I'll tell you what we should look at doing. We should definitely look at doing a show in Lincoln, because if there's people actually getting into what we're doing,
there's definitely a market here for you guys, 100%.
And that's
because we do, it's something quite unique. It's okay listening to the album and watching the videos, but the show itself that we perform
is literally unbelievable.
Me and Vince hand out 3D glasses to everybody, and there's a 3D section in the show, and everybody's wearing 3D glasses, and it's just something else.
It's amazing. It's almost like this radio show. It's actually in 3D. Look, I can actually reach out and almost feel as I'm touching the screen. It's phenomenal. It's like virtual reality. Vince and Ratty, take care. Speak very soon.
Thank you very much for your time. Cheers. Bye. Bye.